This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're going to spend most of this hour talking about Senator Hillary Clinton. 30 women reflect on her presidential candidacy in a new book. But first, a progress report on Iraq. Yesterday, we spoke with three people recently back from Iraq, and we had hoped to be able to talk with the United Nations top envoy in Baghdad, Stefan de Mistura. The schedules didn't work out yesterday, but Mr. de Mistura agreed to talk with us today. Since September, he's been the head of the UN Assistance Mission for Iraq and the United Nations Secretary General's special representative in Baghdad. He returned to New York to brief the UN Security Council on military and political progress in Iraq on Monday. And in his report, there was some optimism. We invite you to join the conversation if you'd like to talk with Stefan de Mistura about how he sees the situation in Iraq or the UN's role in that country. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Stefan de Mistura joins us from the BBC's Bureau at the United Nations. And Mr. de Mistura, nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
And I understand that your initial report was to be, well, somewhat pessimistic, but then one thing happened in Baghdad that caused you to change your mind, at least a little bit.
You're totally right. We were being pessimistic and frankly impatient too about the fact that there was not a indication of a political dialogue, especially in order to bring back the Sunnis into a government of national unity. But on the 12th of January, there was a decision by the parliament to actually address the issue of de-Ba'athification. In other words, 30,000 people who have been in one way or the other associated with the period of the Ba'ath Party, did most of them probably just do it like it happened in Eastern Europe during the Soviet Union. They were joining a party in order to get a job, but they are part of the middle class, and they could be reintegrated, should be reintegrated, not be penalized. Of course, the utter criminals is a different thing. That law has been addressing that point, and that will be a step in the right direction, because the Sunnis are part of Iraq and need to be part of the solution of Iraq.
And also, most of those people are Sunnis, and this would help address another problem that's ongoing in Iraq, how much the Sunnis believe they're invested in the government.
Exactly. And that's what we need at the moment. This is a crucial year. There has been an improvement on the security, also because many Sunnis, the so-called awakening councils, instead of fighting the coalition forces or fighting the Shia, have been starting fighting Al-Qaeda. That's why, as you saw, the recent attacks are mostly from Al-Qaeda sources against those Sunnis who have been deciding to fight Al-Qaeda instead of fighting Shia population in Iraq or the militias or fighting against the coalition forces.
One of the factors of the Sunni boycott of elections is that they tend to be underrepresented in provincial assemblies. In Davos at the World Economic Forum, Iraq's deputy prime minister said today that he favors rolling local elections, a part of the Provincial Powers Act. It has yet to be ratified by Iraq's parliament, but if they went ahead and adopted that too, would that represent progress, do you think?
Absolutely. You see, it's a catch-22. The Sunnis, at the first instance, thought wrongly, frankly, and I'm saying it because they themselves admitted it, that by not participating to the elections, they would be delegitimizing those elections. In fact, they were excluded by the results of the elections, and they discovered that in the provinces and elsewhere, someone else took over, even if they were the majority. Now they got that message. They understand that the best way to play democracy is to play democracy, and therefore they are now eager for elections. Provincial elections are important because they will empower and make people accountable about what to do about water, electricity, everyday life in every province.
And I know your ambit is political and military, but what can you tell us about economic progress in Iraq if this is to succeed at all? People have to be able to find work and feed their families.
You're right, but Iraq, frankly, is a country, very unusual countries. We are talking about 200 billion of barrels of oil of reserves. We are talking about 29 million of people, many of them extremely well prepared, engineers, doctors, and capable of really rebuilding their own country. A country with two rivers and 5,000 years of history. There is no reason that they should not be, once they stop non discussing among each other about issues such as oil sharing, about provincial elections, amnesty, inclusiveness, to actually be able to rebuild their country. And at the moment, the economy is going better, but they need to translate that economy, which is going better, also thanks to the oil prices, into percolating services to every single Iraqi. They're asking, like everybody else, like we are, for better services, a better quality of life. Then they will trust their own politicians.
The United Nations reduced its presence in Iraq dramatically after the bombing there of the headquarters in 2003, when 22 employees died, including Sergio Vieira de Mello. How many UN people are there now? How big is the mission? What's its role?
First of all, Sergio was a very close friend of mine, and I personally, when the Secretary General gave me the honor to represent him in Baghdad, I accepted also because I think that the legacy of Sergio should be continued. He was representing the best goodwill that the international community and UN could have with a country who needs help. So we are back. We have been back for a while, but we are back with a stronger resolution, a stronger mandate. It's not the number which matters, you see, Colm. What matters is the quality of the type of activities we are doing. We are more than 350 internationals anyway inside Iraq, and we could increase that, and we plan to increase. But what we need to increase is the impact we have on the activities in the country and also the interaction with the Iraqis. That's what is our aim, and that's what we are planning to do this forthcoming months.
We're talking with Staffan de Mistura, the United Nations Secretary General's Special Representative to Iraq. And let's see if we can get some listeners on the line. Again, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. And this is Hussein. Hussein with us from Lansing, Michigan.
Hello. Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Go ahead, please.
I have a question for the UN officer. And I'm wondering, from those he had talked to during his visit, if the average Iraqi feels better off that Saddam is gone, or worse off that under the current government and occupation.
Did you get a chance to hear that, Mr. de Mistura?
Absolutely. And Hussein, first of all, I'm not there on a visit. I'm there to stay. I'm based in Baghdad, and that's where I'm going back, because this is the time to be with the Iraqis, not outside. Hussein, when you talk to Iraqis, the average Iraqis, and I do meet many of them, and I do speak some Arabic, they are complaining about the lack of security. And it's true, during the time of Saddam Hussein, many of those thugs and gangsters which have been roaming around the cities were not allowed to be there. But they are also, all of them, complaining, frankly, no difference between Sunnis, Shias and Kurds, about the horror of the dictatorship of Saddam Hussein. And they are also feeling that now the economy, in a way, the market economy that they are having, is in a way giving them hope for the future. What they want is stability. And that is something that they have to build together.
Thank you, Hussein.
Yeah, thank you very much for taking my call.
Bye-bye. The only objections raised when you made your briefing to the Security Council on Monday came from the United States ambassador, who objected to one part of your statement about the cooperation and the role of the countries surrounding Iraq. You said that they contributed significantly to the improvement of the situation there, and the United States representative said, wait a minute, we're not so sure about Syria, which still let foreign fighters go through, and also about Iran.
Well, the United States ambassador, who I know well and respect a lot, may have better information I have about security movements on the borders. I was referring to the political involvement of the neighbors. And Iran, Syria, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Turkey are crucially important in the stabilization and improvement of the situation in Iraq. And we have been detecting, no question on that, a willingness by the Iranians, the Syrians, but everybody else, to actually engage or re-engage constructively in Iraq. And we were actually identifying that as a positive trend.
Let's get Michael on the line. Michael with us from Grand Rapids in Michigan.
Hi there. I'm a student of political science in Grand Rapids. I go to Aquinas College. And my question to you is, it's not necessarily about humanitarian issues, but more politically. Has deep pacification hindered the political process as it has been practiced in the past few years? Or are we starting to implement more figures that were previously part of the Baathist Party.
And he may be taking notes for his thesis, so be careful, Mr. Dimastura.
And he should do that. I think it's an interesting thesis, and we need those theses these days to be able to also read into the future. The debasification issue was long overdue because too many people were just not allowed to be part of the solutions in Iraq simply because they were happening to be associated with the previous government. Look what happened in many other countries in the world after the end of the Cold War, where in fact there was a very clear line drawn between those who were really bad guys and those who had been just participating out of necessity or opportunity to a party in order to do their job. Many of these people are part of the middle class. Many of them are in fact being crucially useful and can be crucially useful in the reconstruction of Iraq. In that sense, the debasification law is urgently needed and was urgently needed. And I think we should go forward on that because a government of unity in Iraq, including those Sunnis who want to be part of it, is, together with the Shia and the Kurds, the solution for the future.
Michael, thanks very much. Good luck with your peace. Bye-bye. And finally, we just have about a minute with you left, Mr. Dimastura. But after all the mistakes, all the bloodshed, all the hatred, all the internecine warfare, do you think Iraq can make it?
Yes, for three reasons. The first one, forgive me if I use a personal judgment, but I'm a optimist. Otherwise, I would not be working for the UN in war zones. The second reason is because I've been 9 times in my life so far in Iraq, and I've acquired a high level of respect for their capacity of rebuilding and starting again and rebuilding and starting again and again. And the third one is that there has been too much blood, too much suffering, and there is a fatigue among themselves. They are telling me that. There's been leading nowhere. After Samarra, it was a tragedy. 4 million people were actually between refugees and IDPs, and they're realizing this is leading nowhere. But we need to help them. We need to help them to make sure that this year is well utilized in that direction.
Stefan Dimastura, thank you very much for your time, and good luck on your return to Baghdad.
Thank you.
Stefan Dimastura, UN Special Representative to Iraq and head of the UN Assistance Mission there, with us from the Bureau of the BBC at the United Nations. Coming up, we'll explore the particular emotional dilemma that Hillary Clinton's candidacy poses for women. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.